You're just in time for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, the radio outreach of the Christian Research Institute. Our purpose here at CRI is to equip Christians to provide biblical answers to life's most important questions, to read the Bible for all it's worth, and counter the teachings of cults and world religions that deviate from the plumb line of God's Word, because life and truth matter. For more information, to order resources or donate, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The following program was pre-recorded. Now here's the president of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff.
A lot of you hanging on. We'll go right to the phone calls. First up, Manny, Riverside, California. Hi, Manny.
Hey, Hank. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm blessed. Here's my question. Bible manuscripts. I got saved in King James Only Church, and I left that and got involved with a non-denominational group and went into King James. And the past 3 years, I've just been looking at these different versions, Bible translations, a lot of confusion going on. What do you recommend? What are your thoughts on Bible translations? What would be a good translation to teach out of? And where you're getting the whole picture as opposed to maybe a couple of verses being omitted or maybe even not even flowing right. What do you think about that? And what translation is it that you like?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Let me answer the latter part of that question first. I use various translations for various purposes. For example, I love the melodic nature of the King James Version. It's inherently memorable. There's a certain cadence to it, and I love Elizabethan English. So from that perspective, I'm very fond of the KJV. But I would never, ever subscribe to KJV only. I want to go with the best manuscript evidence that is extant today. And one has to remember that the KJV was commissioned by King James I in 1604 and not completed in 1611. Since then, there have been discoveries of manuscripts which have, in a very real way, enhanced our understanding of the biblical text. Now, there aren't substantive changes, but there are some changes, and some of them are stylistic, because words that were denotative in Elizabethan English are now connotative, and therefore the words have been changed such that we understand what they mean. For example, if you look, I think it's Acts chapter 28, it says that Paul from thence fetched a compass. Well, what does that mean? Compasses were not extant in the Western world, and even in the Eastern world were largely unheard of. They weren't invented except in the Chinese sense. And so we have little sense of understanding what from thence we fetched a compass means. So the new translators in the modern translations, they say, well, that means he proceeded in a circular course, which of course he did. And so they take it from the connotative back to the denotative so we understand what it means. Some of it, of course, has to do with, as I mentioned, the discovery of newer, more ancient manuscripts, newer in the sense that they weren't extant before, more ancient in the sense that they're older. So I think that that has helped us understand things about the Bible, even some of the uses of words in the Old Testament. So I don't subscribe to King James Version only. I think King James is a very good version. But the newer translations are useful as well. If I'm going to be memorizing the book of Proverbs, which is pithy, I would do so in the NASB because it is more in the standard of a formal equivalency than a dynamic equivalency. If I'm going to quote the Sermon on the Mount, as I have in various places around the world, I'd do it using the NIV because it sounds more like I'm just talking. So for the one, I want the more pithy. For the other, I want it more understandable in the street language of our day. But as far as omitting verses, you know, if, for example, you don't have the comma Johannium in the newer versions, although it is usually in the footnotes, the reason is because it isn't found in the older, more reliable manuscripts. So it's not a matter of omitting it, because the concept is carried elsewhere in Scripture, but it is recognizing that the oldest, most reliable manuscripts don't include it to begin with. I've written about this in various places. Where you can get a pretty good overview of this is in my book, Has God Spoken?, which is available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Colin. He's listening in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Colin.
Hey, how you doing, Hank? Listen, I want you to give me just 20 seconds to describe something to you. I have a son who has 170 IQ, who in science class has decided that Christianity or theology has no place in the world. I have a 12-year-old daughter who has gender identity issues because of what's going on. And it's not because of what they've been taught at home. We were a church-going family in a good church, but I will lay it on the shoulders of the educational system. What I want to ask you is, when did that start? Because I remember in 1962, I was in class as an altar boy, and the Catholic religion doesn't matter. It just matters that 90% of the people I knew were Catholics or Christians, and we took tests on evolution, Piltdown man, Cro-Magnon man, and it was almost like a joke, but we lived and died, and I was on A honor roll, but I failed science.
You know, I think ultimately it's not a matter of IQ, whether your IQ is 170 or whether your IQ is 150 or 130. The real issue is, do you have an open mind? And the problem with the evolutionary paradigm is the closing of the American mind. What's happened is we only allow for naturalistic explanations for that which we encounter in the universe. And I think that is ill-conceived. It is illogical because the fact of the matter is the universe is an effect that requires a supernatural cause. To believe otherwise is to say that nothing created everything, that life came from non-life, and that the life that came from non-life produced morals. I think the real issue is a matter of the closing of the American mind, and philosophical naturalism has become the narrative. The cosmos is all there is, or all there ever was, or all there ever will be. The motto of Sagan is being lauded, but it's not laudable. In fact, it's lamentable, the reason being that it is a great example of the closing of the mind as opposed to being open to all the possibilities that are extant.
Yes, my son thinks Sagan is godlike.
Well, again, if you are a child growing up and that's the only narrative that you hear, then you're going to get a particular perspective of the world. And the reason that in many cases that only philosophical naturalism is now on the table is there was a good long time that Christianity, you sort of alluded to this in the prologue to your question, Christianity stepped away from the table. And now, once we want to come back to the table, everybody's looking at us and saying, who are you? Where did you come from? Not only that, but unfortunately, many people within the Christian church, the broader fundamentalist community, is ill-equipped to do science rightly. And therefore, they're discredited and not taken seriously in the academic community. Fortunately, there are those like Casey Luskin, who wrote the article in the Christian Research Journal on cosmos. And that's a very enlightening article, by the way, because you'll see just how people have closed their mind and uncritically bought into disputed theories like the Safana hypothesis of human origins. The idea being that in a drier climate in Africa, you had diminished woodlands and that forced our forebears out of the trees and allegedly produced not only upright walking but larger brains. In other words, according to Tyson, who is the new Carl Sagan, the Carl Sagan of our epoch, this is how human intelligence evolved. What he doesn't tell you is this is a very much disputed idea. Most academics don't hold to this at all anymore. But he clings fastidiously to this belief, and it becomes his own fundamentalist from the left persuasion. So again, I think people are being brainwashed. You know, a son or a daughter goes to school, and there's only one narrative that they hear anymore. And that narrative is pressed upon them with ferocious frequency. And if you hear of all of the evidence on one side of a ledger and never expose the evidence on the other side of the ledger, you're not going to be educated. You're going to be brainwashed. You're simply going to be led in a particular direction, no matter what your IQ. Again, this is one of the reasons that I am so focused on getting people to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. I just think it's one of those resources that will equip, encourage, enlighten, and open the mind, because it gives, in many cases, the other side of the perspective that you don't find in the typical American narrative that is being pressed upon us. We'll be back in just a few moments with more answers to your questions. Please stay tuned.
Every Bible Answer Man broadcast, such as the one you're listening to right now, is made possible through the financial support of friends like you. Each month, we depend entirely on God's provision through His people to bring you more of the broadcast, podcast, and other resources you rely on. If you want a sound proclamation and defense of the gospel of Jesus Christ to continue to be heard through the outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, become a member of CRI's support team today. Call 888-7000-CRI and stand with CRI daily in the battle for life and truth. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website at equip.org. We'll return shortly with more from Hank Hanegraaff. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Endless predictions about end-time events and published timetables counting down the end have proven to be wrong 100% of the time. When doomsday predictions fail, there is double-duty damage. Many theologically juvenile and scripturally superficial Christians abandon the faith as a result of these failed predictions, and the public image of Christianity is damaged, making Christians appear to be hopelessly naive and easily duped biblical bumpkins. Hank Hanegraaff's book, Prophetic Stars in the Constellation of Biblical Prophecy, will equip you not only to interpret biblical prophecy correctly, but to remember it as well. To receive your copy of Prophetic Stars as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us online at equip.org.
Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we'll go right back to our phone callers. We'll talk next to Andrew, listening in Modesto, California. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Hank, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. A friend of mine asked me a question the other day that I couldn't confidently answer, so I told her I'd call you and do some research and see what I come up with. She asked me if in the Old Testament, before the fall, everything was originally designed to eat plants or herbs. Why is it that there are animals that are specifically designed to hunt and eat meat?
Yeah, well, I don't think that the premise is correct. The idea that prior to the fall, all animals were designed just to eat herbs or plants. That's a presupposition made by some Christians, but I don't think it is a popular, nor is it a universally held presupposition.
Okay.
And I've written about this whole contention and contextualized it in a book called The Creation Answer Book. If you want to hang on, it'll give you answers not only to this question, but in a broader sense to other questions, because it really depends on what your presuppositions are when you come to that particular issue. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to David in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hi, David.
Hi, Hank. I've been listening to you for a very long time, and I was watching the History Channel, and I studied physics in college, but I have this burning question of the Higgs boson, and, you know, how most people call it the God particle. My question is that true that since they have found this particle that gives mass to matter, is it true that because of the really fine tuning of the universe, that God is really out there?
Well, I think it does point to God, absolutely. In fact, you know, the appellation, the God particle given to the Higgs boson by Leon Letterman in his 1993 book, The God Particle, that was the name of the book, and that's where the appellation came from and why it stuck. But the reason he chose that label was because, like God, the particle underlies every physical object that exists, and like God, the particle is very difficult to detect. So I think the appellation is a good one for the situation. But look, this is, as you allude to in the prologue to the question, the subatomic particle and the standard model of particle physics. And it has been the final particle in the standard model to be empirically confirmed. But because of the appellation, the God particle, there are people who are, unlike you, ignorant of the subject, who think that somehow or other, to say that there is now a God particle expunges the need for God the Creator. And because of that, and some other reasons, we actually did an article in the Christian Research Journal. It was written by William Lane Craig, and it's titled The God Particle. And I think it's really important because one of the things William Lane Craig points out is that a lot of people who simply don't have the kind of background knowledge that you have, well, they're writing newspaper articles and they're using the appellation or the moniker, the God particle, in such a way as to suggest to their readers that God is no longer necessary. Of course, nothing is farther from the truth. And what you said in the prologue to the question, I think, is right on point. The particle that gives mass to the other particles is what is in view here, not the expelling of God.
The reason why I had called to ask is because my physics teacher actually had told me, he said, "Bah humbug, the God particle and God is not real." Because, and here's why, gravity explains how everything in the universe using the four interactions of energy is what causes everything to happen. You have gravity, then you have your strong and weak nucleotides, and your I forget the last one he had said, but and then he went on to say that because of that not being possible, that there is no God. And he said that he supports the idea and that most people that are out there that are in the science field, and I'm kind of on the side of science, but more on God's side. I'm more for Jesus. I praise him all the time. But anyway, getting back to what I was saying.
Yeah, but these are not mutually, I mean, the way in which this is posited is as though these are mutually exclusive domains. So you say, well, I'm sort of on the science side, but I'm also on the God side. Well, the truth of the matter is these are interlocking, overlapping domains. They're not isolated domains. And to be real candid, if one becomes conversant with scientific history, they find that the great scientists who have brought science to a place where it could develop as it has in the modern epoch, those men and women were not only men of science, but they were men of God. So this is not a contradiction as though if you're a scientist, you can't be a biblicist. The fact of the matter is the Bible largely deals with God's unfolding plan of revelation and of redemption for humankind, whereas what science deals with is something that is commensurate with what we find in the book of nature. So God has the book of the Bible, which is in essence special revelation, God's unfolding plan of redemption, but he also has the book of nature, which is general revelation, and his eternal power, divine nature, are clearly seen through what has been made so that men are without excuse. I'm thinking of something that is pointed out in the article by William Lane Craig, and that is, it is very exciting when we encounter this Higgs boson, because what has happened as a result of that is we have a sense that you can have no explanation apart from God, because inculcated in the process is the brilliance of mathematics, which could not come about or is very unlikely, you have to really stretch credulity to say it came about, apart from design that we see in God's created handiwork.
And that is exactly what I kind of told him. Not as elegant as the way you put it, but he had shunned me and said, no, because of the multiverse, because of there being 11 different dimensions out there. And I said, well, how do you know that God's not in any of those dimensions?
Well, another thing you want to ask him is the multiverse ad hoc? And I think that if he is being truthful, he would have to tell you that, yes, the multiverse is an ad hoc speculation that doesn't have any basis in real science. So I've actually written about this because theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking is infamous for supposing that the existence of a vast number of universes, a multiverse, explains the fine-tuning of our universe. In other words, he asserts that given a sufficient number of random universes, one of them is bound to have the necessary conditions to support not only intelligent life, but also the proposition that blind chance can account for the fine-tuning to begin with. In reality, the multiverse proposition, I think, is an utterly desperate attempt to account for an unfathomably fine-tuned universe. And I think this, once again, shows bias in a particular direction. And I would tell your science teacher that he would do well to open his mind at least to possibilities outside of philosophical naturalism. Once you embrace philosophical naturalism, all you do is you live in a universe that is fatalistically determined on the basis of brain chemistry and genetics.
And string theory doesn't fit in there at all?
What do you mean, doesn't fit there at all?
Well, with how you were saying about there being the different multiverses out there, and he was saying string theory is what we're going to prove or use to prove that all this happened and that there is no creator. It's just a...
But yes, I mean, I think given his particular perspective, I would say, yeah, they run in tandem. And so note carefully the qualifier I made there, because
In the sense of the multiverse theory, what you have is something that is proposed, but there's not a shred of evidence to support the existence of a physical universe other than our own, much less a virtually infinite number of that kind of universe. So the hope and the hope of multitudes who share these kinds of presuppositions is that they have a theory, and that theory is going to somehow or other prove to be correct by something that's discovered in the future. So I call this theoretical pining rather than scientific discovery. And I think in addition to undermining science, the multiverse hypothesis throws plain old common sense under the bus for reasons that I've written about in the Creation Answer book. And I also point out there that the eminent theoretical physicist and, by the way, Hawking colleague Roger Penrose, even though he himself is an agnostic, has rightly concluded that the multi-universe hypothesis is impotent and misconceived. In other words, the Big Bang turns out to be an event of almost infinitesimal probability, and the probabilistic resources provided by a multiverse turn out to be insufficiently rich. So the Big Bang isn't something that is created or happens over and over again, and therefore the most plausible explanation for the fine-tuning of the universe is yet, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So long for now.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith, answer Bible questions, and encourage Christians to watch their life and doctrine closely. To find resources to help equip you, go to equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call us at 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.